This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. Rebranded Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit those follow buttons, whatever you're listening on. And let's get into today's reflection on our conversation with Dominic Cooper.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent. Okay, people, welcome back to Rebranding Safety. You know what rebranding safety is nowadays, and here we are, we're reflecting on my conversation with Dominic Cooper. This is probably the one interview I was most nervous about, and I said that in the intro to the actual interview that hopefully you listened to last week. Let us know what you thought of it. Hit us up on all the social medias. Come find me personally on LinkedIn, James McPherson, Rebranded Safety on LinkedIn and Facebook, and Rebranded Safety on Twitter, because Twitter is hashtag special. So, hope you enjoyed the conversation. It was a nerve-wracking one for me for a few reasons. We recorded this a really long time ago, and I'd probably say I'm better placed to talk to Dom now as than I was back then. If I'm honest, I actually recorded this conversation with Dom not long after I spoke to Tim, and Tim Marth's episode went out forever ago. So it was a really, really, really long time ago, and I wanted to do a few things. I wanted to remain kind of like Switzerland, quite neutral in the safety one, safety two argument, and Dom is a very prominent part of that argument. And some of the people on the safety two side say that, you know, he misrepresents safety two, and he would say that, you know, safety two misrepresents safety one. And I didn't want to be seen to be talking to a safety two person one week and being like, oh yeah, safety two is the best thing since sliced bread, and then talking to Dom the following week and saying, oh yeah, safety one's the best fit to sliced bread and safety two is bullshit. I didn't want that to come across like I was like that, because I genuinely don't think I am, but hopefully I didn't come across like that. So I was quite nervous about that. I was also very nervous around the fact that Dom is like a walking sponge of information. This geezer can pull a quote out and a date and a time and what the weather was like when the person wrote it off the top of his head. He's unbelievably good at quoting things, etc., etc. So I was nervous about that as well. So I did a hell of a lot of research about it. The conversation was off the back of Dom's article, Safety Differently, Not So Different, which we'll link in the description for you all to pick up. Firstly, let's kind of talk about why I brought it forward. So as I alluded to in the introduction of the conversation last week, I intended to put Dominic's conversation out towards the end of the mini series we're doing now, and the reason for that was I wanted you to all kind of listen to this mini series and then be like, oh yeah, this is so amazing, and then Dom come over and kind of like critically be critical of it, and that be like, oh okay, and just kind of put you back a bit. However, there was a couple of things in the back of my head. One, like I said, I've recorded this with Dom forever ago. I was conscious of that. I kind of felt bad for Dom in a way, and I felt bad for myself, like we kind of put this out forever ago. We should have put this out forever ago, but I kept holding it back because I knew it'd be so good if I could get this mini series up and running, and this would be such a good conversation to hear in that mini series. So I held it back for that reason. But then why did I bring it forward? Well, I decided pretty last minute this morning that I was this morning at work, the day I'm recording this, which is about a week before you'll actually hear this, to put it out last week. And the reason for that was primarily because I felt like this was already becoming this big Safety 2 miniseries, and I felt like I needed to get that critical Safety 1 voice in there pretty quick. I felt like it was already starting to feel like this miniseries was all about, it looked a bit like we were going to be maybe labelled in that Safety 2 hippie kind of crusader brand, which I didn't want us to have. And this miniseries is not about picking one or the other. It's about showing the similarities and maybe asking you to focus more on the similarities than the differences in these two so-called two systems. So I wanted to have Dominant quite early, and like I said, I bounced around back and forth with this time and time again. I just made the decision this morning, right, it's going out next week. So let's move on. What have I got in my notes? Let's have a look. So I will put a little caveat here, is I've approached nearly every single person that is extremely critical about Safety 2 on LinkedIn primarily to come on this podcast as part of this mini-series, and all have refused other than Dom. So fair play that Dom is the only one willing to not hide behind his keyboard. And, you know, if the others that I've approached are listening and want to just change their mind and come on after listening to this, then you're still welcome. But you know what? Don't sit behind your keyboards on social media if you're not willing to come on and discuss it. Where I genuinely think I would be on the fence, like I say, quite neutral. I'm willing to listen to everybody's opinion. But the more and more you just keep attacking each other on LinkedIn, the less and less people like me who are trying to work out what the fuck is actually going on here are engaged in your conversations and your posts and your articles or whatever you're doing. It just switches people off. So, you know, hats off to Dom. He was willing to back up what he wrote and come on to the podcast and talk about it. So thank you, Dom, and fair play to you, mate. So we've covered why was I nervous. Have I covered all my notes? Let's have a look. First thing, heated debate. Yeah, I mean, it is a really heated debate, and that just brings nerves anyway. I was really concerned about that misrepresentation piece. I was really concerned about, I'm conscious that we probably have more listeners on the Safety 2 side. If you are on a side, I don't think you should be if you are, but... And I just thought, oh, this is just a like political nightmare. So that was what I was worried about. Let's get into some of the things that Dom mentioned then. So Dom feels like he was attacked by Safety 2. That is the overarching kind of beginning of that conversation. You know, he said he was pretty much vilified on social media after he wrote some posts and some articles, etc., etc. And I wanted to kind of put this out there that I have witnessed Dom be extremely aggressive on webinars, on LinkedIn posts, etc. And I think there is some bias there. I genuinely think there is some bias there, which we all, us as listeners and us as kind of people trying to work out which fork in the road to take, so to speak. We need to be aware of those biases, because, and I don't think Dom is unique in this. I think Todd has a hell of a lot of biases. I think when it comes to this academic space, there's more egos than there is actual anything else, maybe. I don't really know. I'm just speaking from my own opinions, from conversations with people. However, whilst I have seen Dom be aggressive, I have seen nothing short of what I would say digital bullying from people that are so-called Safety 2, you know, whatever, advocates, whatever you want to call yourselves. Two or three people come to mind. One of them is particularly prominent, and I've seen him write an entire blog about one of Dom's posts and just literally ripping into him. Which frankly I thought was disgusting, and frankly I thought was just shocking, and really I thought it was kind of contradictory to the kind of values what I would think are inherent within Safety 2. So yeah, that was shocking. And I think when it comes to this argument, I think we go to work, if you're a safety, so-called safety two person, you go to work and you're all about, oh, what's the context, and, you know, have some empathy and stuff like that. And the second there's someone who comes along that says they don't think safety two is anything new or anything special, you forget all of your values and just become an absolute dickhead. And I think that's on both sides. I think there's people on the safety one who are just complete assholes every single day that do nothing but boring same old posts with no research, no articles, no links, no nothing backed up to anything. It's just pure rhetoric. And sometimes opinions and rhetoric are valuable. I genuinely think they are. But most of the time, it's just complete horrendous rubbish. And it's just all of this arguing is probably two very small groups of people. Excuse my mum's dog in the background dreaming. And it kind of overpowering from the actual conversation that needs to be had. So, and that is the aim of this miniseries, is to draw you away from the arguments and to try and tell you what these stuff is actually about. So hopefully we've done that. That was my little rant there about people arguing too much. Let's have a look at what else. I think Dom has this kind of thing that didn't sit well to him, this notion around no blame, this notion around safety too, safety differently, new view, has zero accountability. He talks about you're not allowed to, if people choose to behave poorly, you can't blame them. If people choose to take shortcuts, you can't blame them. Now, this is just my 10 pence worth. I think I tried to say this to Dom and hopefully this came across well enough. But my opinion on this is that I genuinely don't think that is the case. Now, if in the academic writings or in the books that people have written that it does say that, frankly, I don't care. I couldn't care less. I really couldn't. Like, I think there is an element of accountability. I think we all have to take responsibility for our own actions. And sometimes we make mistakes and sometimes we do things. Do the context, the environment, the situation, whatever, drive us to influence those behaviours? Like Dom would say influence, or Todd would say drives or defines the behaviours. Scott Geller says the environment drives or defines the behaviours. You know, we're all pretty much saying the same thing here. Of course we're influenced by things. And sometimes we're influenced by things and we make a mistake and we're still held to account for that. And that should probably, that's probably right. However, what I feel like the Safety 2 community or the Safety 2 principle is not so much that we can't blame, it's that we must aim to learn. So that sometimes the blaming doesn't let us learn. If you imagine like an incident, you would get to an incident and you'd be like, right, what happened? Well, Bob did press this button when he shouldn't have pressed that button. Okay, well, let's sack Bob then. End of story. But actually, what we don't fix is the one thing that made Bob press that button, which might have been the poor, I don't know, let's say we wrote the procedure wrong. Now, I'm really dulling this down just for the sake of this conversation, but let's say the procedure said, don't press that button, and Bob pressed that button, but then we sacked him for it, but actually the procedure was wrong. If we just stick at blame, we never got to learn. That is a real simple way of kind of how I interpreted this conversation around blame in the Safety 2 space. So that was my thoughts on it. I kind of get what Dom is saying, in that, you know, when you have that conversation around blame, people do kind of automatically say, well, how can I hold people to account? I feel like the biggest thing here is this fear of people, of this perception that people are these crazy people, that our employees are these crazy people that are going to do things wrong all the time, that they're going to just be arseholes for the sake of it. I genuinely don't think that's the case. So I think about this this story I heard on a podcast, the Knowledge Project podcast, that's it. And it was this lady who kind of has raised some of the most successful children in the world. Like, she's raised children that have become CEOs of Facebook or something like that, and Amazon or whatever, I don't know. No, it wouldn't be Amazon. But anyway, you know what I mean. Big brands. And she gives this example, which reminds me so much of the workspace. She gives me this example where they go on holiday, there's loads of kids there, and all their kids are on their phones, and they're not appreciating all the things that this holiday, this amazing venue, has for them. So all the parents are like, well, just take their phones off of them. And this grandma, she says, actually, no, let me try something. So she goes over to the kids and says, hey, kids, what do you think about this environment? Do you think you're wasting it on by just sitting on your phones? But like, just have a think about that. I want you to discuss amongst yourselves and maybe come up with a rule or something, or come up with a way to go on your phone and appreciate the surroundings as well. But I'm not going to influence that. You just go away and have a chat amongst yourselves and see what you come up with. Long story short, the kids come back. They say like something crazy like, we made a decision, Grandma. We're not going to go on phones from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. And it's like, and the grandma's like, Jesus Christ, I would have never thought of anything that restrictive. But yet the kids did it. They followed it. They adhered to it throughout the whole thing. Why? Because they created that rule. Why? Because they were given that autonomy and that engagement to be able to create that rule themselves. And that created ownership, which ultimately created accountability. So at that point, when do you come back and you say, well, you've done something wrong? Well, for me, this is a point of safety too, where you go back, the rule's not being followed, and your aim must be to ask why the rule's not being followed, because the rule could be wrong. You know, things change all the time. The rule could be wrong. So it's not necessarily the person's fault all the time. But maybe we get to a point where we find out that that person has just blatantly sabotaged someone, right? It could be because of something outside of business. It could be because of something completely crazy. It could be because of anything. But there's always things that drive these behaviors. Sometimes they're out of the business's control, and they may have no choice other than to hold that person to account. I think that still exists in the world of safety too. I think what safety too is trying to say though is you have to try and learn why that person did that, so that you can stop it happening again. And if that is your driver, then you will do well. That, to me, is what they're saying. Now, I could be wrong. And if Sydney wants to finally answer my emails and come on this podcast and answer a lot of the questions I have for him, then you are more than welcome, mate. So, let's move on. I think we've covered that. I agree. He mentioned the debate between Todd and Scott. Don mentioned that, and I just wanted to kind of, I'd say second it, but I think I've said it about 20 times in this podcast. There is a video between Scott and Todd in which they are both arguing, but saying exactly the same thing. It's kind of funny how they are just literally saying, it's raining outside. And the other one's going, no, it's raining outside. And then the other one will go, no, it's raining outside. It is quite literally at times that painful. One day I'll do a screen grab video, and I'll just watch it and critique it whilst we're watching it, and produce a video for you all. That's quite a good idea. I might do that actually. So anyway, yeah, I'll link that debate in the description below. I've covered the blame thing. A lot of Dom's points, which actually in hindsight I wish I'd have thought about when I was doing this mini series, I wish I'd have questioned Todd on this, but a lot of Dom's argument is that he is lacking quantitative answers. He is lacking numbers. What Dom wants to see is, Dom wants to answer a very simple question. Does this actually stop people dying? Does this actually stop people being maimed and seriously hurt at work? Because if it doesn't, then there's no point wasting our time on it. Now, there's two things I want to say here. One, I think that's a very valid question. I think that's a very, very valid question, because ultimately, if people are still dying at work, then really we're not succeeding in our role. If people are still seriously hurting themselves, we are definitely not succeeding in our role. However, there is another part to this where I think we are shifting over to this psychological safety and stress and mental health, and we're understanding that side of things as well, which I suppose could be measured quantitatively through lost time and things like that as well. But Dom is ultimately asking here is, where is the quantitative data? Now, the problem I think we've got here is that fundamentally the debate is between what type of research is better, qualitative or quantitative. Now, I look at it and think, well, why can't they both coexist with each other? I think we have to have them to coexist. I think we would still measure our accidents and incidents because we need to know if we're still hurting people. We still record them and measure them and monitor them. But what we wouldn't have is them being the only thing that drives what we do in our workplace, because we would try to back them up with some qualitative research within our business, some qualitative data of employee surveys and conversations, etc., etc., actual feedback loops, things like that. So I think the two coexist. Now, the problem is I've heard from some qualitative scientists on podcasts and in blogs and conversations on here, and I think we touch on it with a conversation with David Proven you'll hear in a few weeks, that qualitative research is apparently, in quotations, better than quantitative research. Now, I'm no scientist. I don't know whether that's true or not. The problem is you talk to one and you think, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You talk to the other and you go, oh yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And ultimately, before we created this mini series, my aim was to try and get a few of these people in a room together and me host a debate, but no one seems to be up for that. I much prefer to just argue over LinkedIn because, you know, that's just so much better for the world. So fundamentally, I think this kind of safety seems to be the victim of all of these arguments between academics and science. That's how it feels to me. But I think when it comes to the crux of it, I think Dom has a very valid question. Does this stop people getting hurt at work? Because if it doesn't, what's the point? I think that's a valid question. If you disagree, please put a comment on social media. Let's keep it civil, but message me, put a comment on social media, whatever. Share this episode and then say, I don't agree with this point, James. And I'll be like, boom, that's fine. Dom continues on to back that up by saying safety too is completely based on qualitative science, which, like I said, I think I've heard a certain prominent scientist say that, you know, they believe that that is the best version of science, and that Dom then goes on to just say, you know, this is all based on Shine's work. I think at one point he says Shine and I thought he said shite, which is why I laughed. I think he says, and that's all Shine, and I thought he said, and that's all shite, and I was like, anyway, completely off track. But I think a lot of the time people like me and probably you listening kind of get drowned in all of this academic stuff, and for me, I'll tell you what, this mini series is probably, hopefully, I think, one of the best we've done, but also one of the most tiring ones, because I've had to try and throw myself deep into this argument and really understand it, and I just can't get anywhere with it, and it's painful at times, and it's stressful. It's really quite stressful to try and manage. Dom continues on to kind of quote, listing off, you know, a whole ream of companies that have tried safety differently and tried safety too and HOP, etc., and quotes that those accidents and incidents then proceed to kind of subsequently increase in fatalities and or serious incidents after the implementation of HARP or safety differently or safety two. I don't have the science to back that up. I don't have the data to back that up, and frankly, this is the problem, is that you can't really get all of the data that you need in front of you to actually vehemently say this one is the best one to pick. And that is, I think, fundamentally the biggest problem here as to why we're all arguing about it. I think, I think Dom makes a very valid point around safety not being an experiment, around, you know, it's a risk, isn't it, to try something new when we're in safety, because inherently, if we're playing with safety, then we're playing with people's arms, fingers, legs, you know, lives, whatever, their mental health, whatever, and that's sometimes not a risk we want to take in an experiment. But then, to my point in the conversation with Dom, surely everything is an experiment at first. So I feel like we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place there. Like, you have to experiment, but then you don't really want to experiment. I kind of like what Kelvin Genn talked about the other week in mini or micro kind of experiments within your business, you know, picking maybe lower risk areas and trying it, and then as you see success there, putting it up to another section, maybe something like that. But I thought that was a very valid point in what he was saying. It's that kind of, we're kind of risk averse on that point of view, and I kind of feel like that's why IOSH or maybe HSE or any of these bigger bodies are reluctant to commit or even comment a lot of the time on these safety two, safety differently systems because we've not been to see them successful. But you know, as you'll hear in the next couple of weeks from all the other people, they believe it is successful. Dominic mentioned Kevin Furness. You'll hear from him next week. And Kevin is quite passionate around the fact that he thinks he has been successful around it. And fundamentally, the stuff we talk about in Safety 2 makes a lot of sense. You know, engagement was there in the beginning. When we designed health and safety in the UK, we said you need to engage with your people. And that is fundamentally a big part of what Safety 2 is talking about. That, for me, is all we talk about when we say people are the solution, not the problem. All we're saying is there's a shift between you know, doing safety to people and now doing safety with people, which Dom even mentioned in his conversations. We keep coming back full loop here. We're just saying the same stuff over and over again. See, Dom mentions about Sydney. He believes that Sydney is, you know, a full advocate of no rules, no bureaucracy, no paperwork whatsoever. Now, if Sydney comes on the podcast, I'll question him on that. I kind of hope he doesn't advocate that, because I think that would be a bit naive if he did, because I think Dom makes a very valid point in that we need bureaucracy, we need assurances. We have to be able to demonstrate safety to our insurers, to our stakeholders that are not able to go and get that more qualitative kind of understanding by going on the shop floor and talking to people. Excuse the dogs behind me, I've had to shut them in the room with me, that's why we have no choice today. So I hope that's not I hope Dom's not correct in that, I really do, because I do genuinely think that would be an oversight from Mr. Decker, but we'll wait and see. He kind of criticised Decker's use of the word kind of anarchism, around the fact that that's what that is, you know, kind of overthrowing of a government, etc., etc. And part of me kind of thinks that we have to be careful when we use those types of provocative language. I think we do it a lot of the time. And I think a lot of the time it's around trying to sell what we've got, trying to sell our ideas by using these provocative words. And I think that just gets misunderstood. And then people take it as gospel. And I think maybe we're a victim of our own marketing. I think maybe Sydney is a victim of his own marketing. Or maybe he fully backs the idea of anarchism. And then in that case, he's well within his rights to use it, isn't he? And that be the challenge we've got here, in that words only really exist in our own minds. I think that when I think about a bit of anarchism, I think that, you know, we're talking about like comfortable dissent, you know, comfortable conflict within, you know, it's like, kind of like having controlled anarchism, so to speak, within our business, like you know, kind of like that 10th man thing that I talked about, I think, from like World War Z. Having people there to play devil's advocate, like a professional devil's advocate in a way. Maybe that's what he means, I'm not really sure. Maybe one day we'll hear from him. Let's have a look what else I've got in the notes. I've put here that when Dom was talking about Sydney and how his kind of language just kind of, maybe that provocative language has kind of caused a lot of this stuff. It reminded me of when we did our first keynote last year in Sale Sharks Rugby Ground, and a gentleman that was the head of policy for IOSH came over and gave me some feedback. No, he's not head of policy, sorry. Head of ethics, I think, or something like that, I can't remember. Anyway, he came over and he gave some feedback, and he said, do you know what, it really kind of reminded me of Sydney Decker. At that point my knees went weak and I thought, well, could I get a better compliment at that time? And then he said, without pissing people off. And this was the first time anyone had really said anything negative about Sydney to me. Like, a lot of people had been really positive about, like, pretty much put this guy in a pedestal. And I was like, that's interesting. So we spoke a little bit, and he said, you know, we talked about that provocative language. He talked about how aggressive he was and the kind of keynote. And I was like, okay. And I started to do a little bit more of a look into it. And I think that a lot of the time, this brings me to my earlier point, in that we're all, us people just doing the job, doing the do. I feel like we're all just victims of all these academics just arguing amongst each other. This is what science is supposed to be, just people arguing with each other to come up with a solution. That's what scientists do. And all we can do on the shop floor is take whatever research is in front of us, whatever guidance, whatever documents and books is in front of us that we like, that we think works for us, try it in our workplace, see that it works, pick it up and go, this works, let's do it. This doesn't work, let's not. The problem with LinkedIn and social media and so on and so forth is that we're now fundamentally in these arguments. We're in the middle of these academic science-based conversations and arguments that we would never have had foresight of before, or insight, sorry. We'd have never had insight into that stuff before. And now you've got people like me who flunked science, frankly, actually. I flunked every subject at school, and science is the only one I didn't. I got a C in it, which for me was a massive achievement. So I feel like maybe that's a bit of the problem. In the academic space, like I said, I think there's a lot of ego there. I also think there's a lot of... Dom mentioned about Sydney directly quoting Dominic's work in a keynote, negatively quoting Dominic's work in a keynote, whilst Dom was in the room. Now, I'm not being funny. That would piss me off. If it was done in a negative and poor tone, then that's pretty unprofessional. I wasn't there, I don't know, so it's hard for me to comment. I'm speaking hypothetically. So I feel like a lot of the time, the way we talk about this stuff is really aggressive. Like, I've heard people go, there's a certain podcaster that does a very prominent podcast that's very much like that, calls people stupid, you know, idiots, and so on and so forth. Actually, there's two that I would probably say. And I just think it doesn't work. I just put people back up. Remember a long, long time ago, I did a podcast where I talked about Greta Thunberg, where I talked about her aggressive language just puts people on the back foot and it loses the value of what you're trying to communicate, because all you're doing is pissing people off. I think a lot of the time, these bloody academics and your scientists could really benefit from a little bit of learning how to kind of have conflicting opinions, but do it professionally and not do it immaturely, surrounded by arrogance. I think we're all just getting drowned in that argument. That's just my opinion anyway. Hope maybe you'll disagree with me. And if you do, come and let me know. So what else have we got? Well, he finishes off with some really nice points, I thought. He finishes off with the three ingredients for a safety culture, a good safety culture: leadership, engagement, and you fix things. You kind of follow through on what you're saying. And then he finishes off again with the signs of a broken culture: profit first, a profit before safety, fear-based culture, ineffective leadership, non-compliance, primarily in the management levels, miscommunication or what I would call a poor communication, lack of competence and not doing your lessons learned. I don't think there's anything there that I disagree with. I don't think there's anything there that maybe Safety 2 would disagree with. You know, improved leadership. Well, what's leadership? Leadership is all your soft skills stuff. A good psychological safety is leadership is a fundamental part of psychological safety. You know, having empathy and trust and all that, that's good leadership. They're fundamentally a part of safety too. Engagement is a fundamental part of safety too, in my opinion. Or my interpretation would probably be a better way to describe this. Following through on what you say, you know, that for me is just good leadership. It's actually fixing problems, listening. But Dom said a sentence in there that is commonly used in the safety too world. And he said that leaders should be going there and saying, what can I do to make the job safer for you? Now, that's something I hear from nearly every safety two, safety differently, hop, whatever. And that just came out of someone who's vehemently against safety two. So there's something to be said here for how similar these systems are. And I'll close this episode out by saying, when you're hearing these debates and when you're part of these conversations, one, I probably try to avoid them, but two, probably try to focus on what is makes them similar as opposed to what makes them different. The differences are key, yes, but the similarities are way more than the differences, 100%. And my final thing was, I still stand by the fact that when we talk about safety one, I don't think we are talking about behavior-based safety. I genuinely believe that we are talking about the poor implementation of behavior-based safety. I genuinely believe we are talking about the poor implementation of safety as originally intended. A lot of the times I get extremely frustrated when I go into a safety 2 talk or keynote and some geezer is just talking about HSG 65, for example, Plan, Do, Check, Act. He's just talking about Plan, Do, Check, Act, but he's just replaced the words. Or he's talking about the risk hierarchy, for example, which is in basic British safety. And he basically just calls it the resilience triangle or something like that. And I'm like, dude, it's exactly the same as safety as originally intended, as I call it. Excuse me, I just knocked the microphone. So for me, it's... What do you take away from this? Well, listen to the rest of the mini series and take away whatever you think is going to help you. You know, listen to all of these people and don't get sucked up in this debate and don't think, oh, what side am I going to commit to? Listen to the one-liners, listen to the little clips, you know, those three key fundamental bits for a good culture, those indicators of a broken culture that DOMS give you. Pick that up and take it away. Todd's work around building capacity for the stuff that kills you. That, I think, is very valid. Changing the way we look at risk assessments when we're talking about the stuff that really hurts people. Shifting from likelihood to capacity. I think that is really, really good. So that, for me, is how I describe it in my very crude way of describing things. Is in front of you right now, you have a buffet of systems, processes, initiatives, principles, whatever you want to call them, for you to pick at and run away with and combine them together to not create safety 2, safety 3, safety 4, safety 5, to create your safety, to create whatever works for you and your company. Because frankly, this stuff will change as you grow. It's dynamic. It as you as a business grows, it changes. You might not be in a position to have safety 2. I was talking to Colin Nottage just this morning on the Influencer Safety the Interest in Safety podcast, and we were talking about what's more dangerous, poorly implemented safety 2 or poorly implemented safety 1. Now, I vaguely remember somebody telling me, who was on the prominent person at safety 2 camp, saying they'd be more worried about safety 2 being implemented wrong than they would safety 1. And I think that kind of resonates with me. I think you have to be quite mature in your business, within your safety systems, your safety culture, your safety approach to things and how you manage risk to be able to absorb the changes for safety too. And that's just my opinion. That's just my opinion. And I think a lot of businesses are in that space. But a lot of the time, like Teresa Sweeten from Hop, Paradigm Hop Performance Company, you know what I'm talking about. She, I've got an interview of her coming out probably in a long time now. But she says, you know, we go to businesses and we work out if they're compliant first. Because if they're not compliant, then they're not going to be able to do all the other stuff. So for me, I think that's the way to look at this, people. So far, let's listen to the rest of this mini-series and wait and see. But I've taken a lot from Dom. I really like the guy. I think he does talk a lot of sense. I think there is a lot of bias, a lot of egos, a lot of a lot of provocative language used in the academic space, not just from Dom, but from all of them, in which they, in a way, kind of create a really horrible situation for all of us that we can't see the wood for the trees. But overall, there's a lot of stuff that Dom said that I really, really liked. Really liked. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I hope you enjoyed this reflection. Let me know what you thought and come and check us out. Come and talk to us on all the social medias, LinkedIn. You can get me on LinkedIn at James McPherson. You can also get Rebranding Safety on LinkedIn and Facebook under Rebranding Safety. You can go to Twitter, Rebranded Safety, because Twitter's special. And now we're on Instagram as well, so you come check that out. Don't forget to sort yourself out some merch, people. www.rebrandingsafety. Go sort yourself out some hoodies, t-shirts, mugs, the whole shebang. All right, peeps, thank you very much for listening. I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.